Well, this is a shock, a surprise. Tom Tangney opening the show. Wither John Curley, he is here. He's desperately trying to work out his equipment. I'm assuming operator air. But you are indeed listening to the Tom and Curley show, and Curley is not here. Temporarily, I guarantee it. But right now, Tom Tangney is leading the show. Welcome to the Tom and Curley show, and luckily, or not, with John not here, we'd already designed to kick off the show with none other than the cherry pie guy, Chris Sullivan. There he is.
Glad they got your own show, huh? Yeah.
I hope you're interested in being a co-pilot. I may use you my entire segment here if John continues to have troubles.
All right. Well, let me get my conservative hat on. And
yeah, that's right.
And we'll go.
Sure. Yeah, you don't have to fake much, Chris.
Yeah.
We get along just great politically bouncing back and forth. Okay. So anyway, the real reason we had you on, and you are scheduled right off the bat here, whether John was here or not, was that after all, this is opening day. Baseball season is upon us. We're going to have a full house of 9,000 people, at the baseball field.
T-Mobile Park.
It's
T-Mobile Park.
Yes.
way to keep on track of things.
Exactly. Not Safeco Field. Not anything else but T-Mobile Park. But we decided. So neither John and I are baseball experts. I think we both love sports in general, and I love the experience of going to games. I'm not as big a football fan, obviously, as a Tim Hake, for instance. Tim Hake and I used to talk on and on, a longtime Kyber reporter, about the key to baseball. And for him, he is much more into the strategy of the game than I am. I don't really take to baseball like I do to football in terms of what I'm seeing, but I love the experience of going to the games. I love the hangout atmosphere that baseball games allow. And so I'm kind of a secondhand fan. So instead of talking about the game itself and the fact that we're playing the San Francisco Giants tonight, we thought it'd be interesting to talk to you about traffic control and the interesting hiccup traffic control may be seeing sooner rather than later with our efforts at underfunding police. Can you explain the impact of all of this social upset over the police and traffic control?
Yeah, basically, you have to kind of connect the dots here a little bit. But basically, what the Seattle Mariners and, you know, the other teams and some of the bigger arts groups do, when you have a big event, you use traffic control, you plan with the city, whatever. And the Mariners use on-duty Seattle police officers to provide the traffic control in and out of T-Mobile Park. And so that's something that they've done forever, right? But as part of the defunding or reimagining or reforming Seattle police, one of the plans is they are going to move the parking enforcement division out of SPD technically and into a new kind of a civilian oversight area, which means those parking enforcement officers would no longer technically be sworn or badged officers. They'd still have authority, but they wouldn't have the authority that comes with having a badge. So you go, okay, yeah, what's the big deal? Well, our state law doesn't allow somebody who doesn't have a badge to stand in the middle of an intersection and direct traffic. Flaggers can be on the sides of roads or, you know, in the middle of a long highway, something like that. But if you're in the middle of an intersection, say right outside First and Edgar Martinez, you know, you got multiple lanes in both directions, you can't stand in the middle of that intersection and direct traffic under our state law. So the legislature has to try to amend the law. And to do that, you need a bill, you need hearings and all of that stuff to try to make people who are non-sworn officers able to direct traffic. So it's one of those things where Seattle's doing something, it's kind of technically a foul of the state law, so you have to change the state law to make it happen. Not going to be a big deal for fans, honestly, but it's just something that's kind of, I found kind of interesting when you look at the maybe the unintended consequences or things of sweeping reforms. They're, you know, little things along the way, the minutiae that you might not think about until you have to deal with it.
You know, that is interesting that it's a requirement by law. Now, do you think that, because this is interesting for all sorts of political reasons, too, but do you think that that was written as part of the law for safety reasons? Or do you think this was seen as, you know, maybe lobbying on the part of law enforcement to get extra work or overtime work or the like, that there might have been pressure initially to make this a mandatory law? Because it seems unnecessary to insist on police officers doing a lot of just traffic control for these big events.
And that's a great question, because I don't know when this law was originally passed as written, to create that. You know, some would say, well, oh, yeah, maybe because that allows them to get some extra money, extra work.
Yeah.
This SPD gets paid overtime from hour one for doing this work. That's the contract with the Mariners. And so
The
Mariners are like, yeah, we could save a ton of money if we could have just a regular garden variety, you know, someone who's in the trades, a flagger, an expert at this, knows all the training, all that stuff, to be able to move from off the side of the road and into the intersection. I think it might have been early on, assumptions on my part here, speculation would be, well, maybe if there's an officer in the middle of an intersection, you might be more likely to pay attention to someone with a badge than you might not. And that's speculation to me on the beginning of this law. But it needs to be
fair
changed
enough
in order to handle what's actually happening
so,
on the ground now.
This is a law before the
legislature. By the way, I'm sorry. I was on the phone with SPD at the time.
Who are you?
I'm Jake, the guy who's got really...
Jake Curley, everybody.
Yeah, hey, everybody, yeah. I just found out that we have some new password to get on. Luckily, I got that information at 3:04.
You mean the email that went out a week ago?
Yeah.
Email, yeah, to an email that I don't have. All right, so anyway, we are doing an afternoon drive, a top 12 market, everybody. Here we go. I talked to some police officers, and they were telling me that a while ago, Sully, that the parking enforcement people were going to be trying to get this a couple of years ago in order to be able to save money or just take it away from Seattle police and give it to those guys. But then they got into a union thing back and forth with the parking enforcement people, and then they turned it back over to Seattle police. And now is it going to be non-parking enforcement people, or is it? Are they civilians that are trained this way now?
Well, what it would be is it could be the parking enforcement people who will eventually be non-badged, will eventually be non-sworn. The city just hasn't figured out how to do that particular part of it. This doesn't preclude the Mariners from using overtime SPD officers. This just allows them the option to use a non-sworn person, most likely a cheaper option for them for this. But no, this doesn't mean that the SPD can't do this work anymore. Okay. It's something that they can do, but this gives bigger venues the option to use a flagger to do this, someone who isn't sworn.
Okay, two quick questions then. Just in terms of legislation, this has to go, it has to be voted on. It hasn't been voted on. I don't know that there'll be much opposition to this. So let's assume that it gets passed into law. How quickly will that law take effect so that we would suddenly maybe see, after a Mariners game, not a police officer in the intersection, but a civilian?
I don't believe there is an emergency clause tied to this one, so it would be 90 days after the governor signs it, so you would imagine sometime probably midsummer, something like that. But again, it's really dependent on what the city of Seattle does in their ability to figure out how to make that transition, because they could start going to flaggers. Well, I guess you're right. There's a couple things that have to happen, but it could be probably later this summer if this goes forward. I'm not sure if the contract is for a full season yet, and if it is, it might be next season.
Okay.
But
I got you, yeah. And even the bill acknowledges we need to train. I mean, these are not just going to be, Joe and Jill off the street suddenly directing traffic. They need to be trained in all of this. So that's there's going to be some pickup time.
A lot of the construction guys who do this already have the training.
We're done.
Okay.
We're done.
As a traffic expert, Chris, do you think that this will be a problem? Or do you think that this makes some sense, that you don't need a full-on police officer to do this work?
Well, at this point, it really comes down to the drivers and to the public and whether or not they respect the people there that don't have a badge and whether or not they're impaired or not when they leave the stadium. I think most people will be just fine. It's just a matter of how well the people respect those who have the flags this time if they don't happen to be wearing a badge.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Chris. And thanks, John.
Hey. Yes. Hey, can I have my computer back, Sean?
Hey, I don't go anywhere without my music. There we go.
I know. There we go. There it is. All righty. President Biden makes some claims about Georgia law ending voting hours early. The Washington Post looked into this a couple of days ago and gave the president four Pinocchios, which basically stands for Wappadoo. And it keeps talking about the law in Georgia and it needs to kind of get the facts straight on it. But this is, let's see. Is this earlier, Jacob, when he was talking about? Oh, this is last week talking about the legislation, right? This is the law in Georgia. This is the president getting himself four Pinocchios.
What I'm worried about is how un-American this whole initiative is. It's sick. It's sick. Deciding in some states that you cannot bring water to people standing in line waiting to vote. Deciding that you're going to end voting at 5 o'clock when working people are just getting off work. This makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle.
Okay. So I think I don't know if this is directly to distort what's happening down there or it's because the president maybe didn't quite get all the facts right on it. But turns out that people are saying, nope, actually, we don't close down at 5. And if you compare what we're doing here compared to what you're doing in Delaware, it looks like Jim Eagle is flying higher in Delaware than it is in Georgia. But then the president today or yesterday while I'm with ESPN continued to
say, Mr. President, what do you think about the possibility that baseball decides to move their All-Star game out of Atlanta because of this political issue?
I think today's professional athletes are acting incredibly responsibly. I would strongly support them doing that. People look to them. They're leaders. Look at what's happened with the NBA as well. Look at what's happened across the board. The very people who are victimized the most are the people who are the leaders in these various sports. And it's
what? How's that, Tom? The people that are victimized the most are the leaders of the sports?
It's just not right.
I think he's referring to African Americans, would be my guess. Or, there are a lot of Latin players too.
Yeah, he's got the word victim in there. That's all.
This is Jim Crow on steroids, what they're doing in Georgia and 40 other states. What is it all about? Imagine passing a law saying you cannot provide water or food for someone standing in line to vote. Can't do that? Come on. Or you're going to close a polling place at 5 o'clock when working people just get off? This is all about keeping working folks and ordinary folks that I grew up with from being able to vote.
Okay. Washington Post goes after it, and basically you saw what they said, Tom, but they kind of went after each one of these points, talking about the fact that it is open longer. But this is really interesting that they keep going back to Georgia, and if you just look at the facts, it doesn't hold water. You compare Delaware to Georgia, Delaware to Missouri, all these places that apparently are so un-American or so evil. The Washington Post, to do a fact check on it and give him four Pinocchios, that's pretty good for the president for the first time being fact checked by the Post on this one, right?
Yeah, although it's, when you look into this, so first off, the reason we're going after Georgia so hard is because it's the first of 43 states that are trying to move in this direction. And I do think the impulse behind these laws were anti-democratic, the impulse behind it, because when you look at what they was initially proposed, it clearly was directed at the African-American community. Now, because of the backlash, it ended up watering
things
down.
Is there proof of that? Wow, that is really broad. So you're saying that the Georgia legislators are discriminating against black voters?
Yes, because the only reason they're even deciding to do... But the only reason they're deciding to do this is because the Republicans in Georgia were upset that Joe Biden suddenly flipped their heretofore red state, and they ended up electing two Democratic senators, that they decided to make these kinds of moves. And if you look in, I don't know if we want to get into all this detail, but when you look at the initial suggestions, they clearly were targeted. For instance, you couldn't vote on Sundays. Sundays are famous for the Souls to the Polls movement in the African-American community. There was such backlash against that that they decided to relent. So I think the impulse behind that was indeed to kind of restrict the number of Democratic voters. Whether that's racist or not might be secondary. It may be that they don't want Democrats
let me ask you this, Tom. Yeah. Right, so the legislators in Georgia going back and forth on this thing, you can vote on Sunday now. Plus, they have extended hours. They now have a ballot box that is inside, outside, inside, so that it can actually also be protected. It's one per 100,000, better than Delaware. Also, they ask you not to need to put down some number to identify yourself. You don't need to put down your address. You don't have to sign anything anymore. You need a number. And in Georgia, they'll provide you with a number. If you don't have a driver's license, they will provide you one for free, Delaware that doesn't. So this whole thing, what it basically is the president needs to continue to lie about Georgia, to continue to say as if the black people are being victimized, so that's why HR1, which is basically the federal government coming in and taking over all elections across the United States. You want to talk about creating legislation to shut the other side out? Read through HR1 to find out what Nancy Pelosi would like to have go across all 50 states. So
HR1
is Georgia.
Is a response to what is happening post the Donald Trump call for election boards to be overtaken by state legislatures. And that's the most troubling thing, I think, in these new Georgia laws, is that the state legislature can override a local jurisdiction if they think something as funky is happening. Well, something funky that could be happening would be Democratic votes winning, and they might not, you know, approve of that, which is exactly what Donald Trump called for in a lot of these states that he thought were contested.
How many other laws is he trying to pass in Mar-a-Lago? How many more? I'll put Georgia's laws up against Delaware's laws any day when it comes to voting. And by the way, as far as voter suppression is concerned, a higher turnout for African Americans from 2012, 2016, 2018, and 2020. So there's really no suppression. But we're talking about here.
No, that's
make
why
it seem
they're
like
reacting
there's horrible,
so quickly.
Horrible racism more, happening. Jim Crow more, is happening in Delaware.
I agree with the Jim Crow language.
Right.
I don't understand why.
By the way, everybody, read the Washington Post.
That is hyperbole.
Read the Washington Post and find out every single fact distorted or deliberately lied about Georgia that the president is continuing to put
it's
out
only
there.
On that one
that
issue.
He hasn't changed his, in fact, he hasn't
to
changed
five.
His tone.
And water. It says, the law says, you can open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. I think that's maybe why he stays with it, because certainly that's been pointed out that it needn't be that. But
shall,
if it can
the
be
word
that,
is shall or may. Yeah. Shall or may. And the reason the difference is because most of these are volunteers, and most of them are, the polls are volunteer. So can you get volunteers to be there? Shall or may gives
that's
the flexibility
right.
with each one of the counties.
And
but
if it
it's
closes
not about
at
Jim
5,
Crow,
that could be a problem. But I agree. It's not just, I don't know. I agree that Jim Crow, that's hyperbole. That's like Donald Trump hyperbole kind of language. I don't know why he's using that. I agree with that.
That's because he's not a uniter. All right. Let's take the check traffic for us on Thursday. Keel Mortgage. By the way, good article in the Wall Street Journal. If you're thinking about buying a second home, check it out. They talk about how Fannie and Freddie are changing some of the rules. But Keel Mortgage, the ones to talk to when it comes to having anything to do. Actually, do this. Call Keel. Ask them about it. They'll know. Call them and find out more. Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. It's the second home buyers just surging markets, Tom. That's the fascinating amount of money people are just blowing as they realize, hell, you know, I'm 60 years old. I'm going to buy a second house. So,
did you notice there's a new Cars for Kids jingle?
I didn't hear it.
That is a shocker.
Is it good?
No.
How could it not be? They're on our station.
It's Tom, I think we can all admit it's intentionally it's intentionally performed poorly, out of tune. It's a very fascinating marketing strategy.
Okay.
But we've gotten multiple texts about it, I will say.
Have we?
Hold on.
Stop the world. I want to get off.
No. That's Anthony Newley.
Anthony Newley. Yeah, I knew you'd get it, John.
Yeah. What kind of fool am I?
Who am I?
Never fell in love.
Okay.
Tom.
Yes.
Can I say something?
Sure.
It's April Fool's. Do you really think the cars from kids' butt is supposed to be like,
that's
or
the
is
case.
It a joke? Come on!
Actually, the title of the spot is called April Fools.
Beautiful. Okay, good. Well, I noticed it.
1-877 cars for kids. 1-877.
That's all they get.
By the way, I made fun of that spot one time, and then. Bitter Brian Bucklew came in and he goes, I hope you're happy because now we have to make good, or some ridiculous thing that, you know, kind of slapped my wrist. Remember that, Sean? Because you can't make fun of the thing. I played it or talked into it or punched into it while the kid was singing.
Yeah.
I did all the things that people want to do when certain spots are running.
Right. But you're like the host who sort of promotes certain things. So I understand that you're not supposed to make fun of sponsors, you know?
Is it true that Cars for Kids pays more than the others because they know that they can be in a reason that people turn away from the radio in order to call them immediately and donate their car? Is it true?
I have Bitter Brian Bucklew on the line, John. Please stop.
Moving on. Alrighty. Hey, by the way, if you've got a kid and your kid's a good basketball player, here are the numbers for you. 555,000 kids played high school basketball. How many make it to the pros, Tom?
3.5% of all high school players make it into even college. And then only 1%
from there. Yes.
1% of all the college players. So we're talking about 1%.
160. 160 is what it ends up out of the college. And most kids, until they reach about 11 or 12, I'm going to play professional football. I'm going to be a football player. I'm going to be a basketball player. They're like, wah, wah. I mean, a lot of people make a lot of money off of those dreams.
That's right. And so there is an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune about this and saying that, you know, we all want, in fact, every time you have a stellar athlete on, they say, you know, kids, you can dream too. You know, you dream hard enough, all this. Whoa. And that's clearly not the case. This is like the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. And I'm not saying that 1% of 1% of 1% don't really work hard and have those dreams. But most of us are never going to get there, and we realize it as life goes on. So I was wondering, why do you want to write an op-ed about saying, hey, be realistic. Your kid's not going to become a pro, most likely, 99.9% of the time. But what the article really does, the op-ed really does, is point out that there is a kind of an industry built around a youth sports industry that is worth billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. And the question that's raised here is this something that we should be, as parents, should be sort of furthering or not? And she points out that 63% of U.S. families that have kids in sports, they spend between $100 and $500 per month per child. My family, I had five boys. Imagine doing that five times over. Every month, almost 20% of those parents paying $1,000 per month. This is big business. And they've invented, this is stuff they didn't have when I was going to school in the Iron Age or whatever. But with my kids, if your kid is pretty good for your school's, you know, your elementary school team, then you can go to these elite squads, and then you have to pay for administration for there. And I've got a nephew who's who's really good at sports, and he plays football and he plays soccer and all that, and he gets invited to these elite teams, and then what happens? Well, his poor, you know, mom and dad have to pay for these. I mean, it's great. They get to go to different states and all that, but it gets to be really expensive. And then the question is it worth it? Because if your kid turns pro, obviously he's going to be able to repay you in terms of money, but the kinds of experiences that school sports are good at, which is creating lifelong friendships and teaching you teamwork and determination, you don't need to spend that kind of money to enjoy sports, or do you? That's
you
the op-ed
do
question.
If you are in certain neighborhoods, right? Like when I told the story before, when I sat there with Rye, he's signing up for baseball, and he told me, because he didn't play for 1 year, and then he said, Dad, I'm never going to be able to catch up to everybody. I said, why not? Because everybody has batting coaches. I said, really? I said, the one guy goes, you have a guy goes, yeah, I got a personal, you know, batting coach for Jackson or whatever the kid's name was. And I'm like, really? And then you start to look at how much money it costs. Why can't it just be for fun? But it's never for fun. It just keeps going all the way up. And then you end up, you know, the heat ride roller dropped out because it just didn't, he couldn't compete because I wasn't willing to spend the money on it.
Yeah. I know, and it's definitely unfortunate, because the great thing about sports is, in some ways, it's the great equalizer. If you're good at sports, it doesn't matter if you're poor or rich or whatever. But it turns out that indeed it does matter, because we've kind of, I don't know how you describe it, but because we now have these kinds of elite teams, it's like it fights against the impulse to just play for your school. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's we live in a free country. It's a capitalist society, and if we want to do that, I suppose we can't really stop them. Another issue that this writer raises, and by the way, she's all in favor of youth sports. She's got kids in sports, but she says injuries also, because kids push themselves so hard and end up, you know, spending more and more time on sports, they end up getting more injuries. It could be problems down the road that maybe if we weren't so highly focused on, hey, my kid could be a pro someday. It'd be interesting to run this by Sully. He's got a kid who's got a scholarship, and he mentioned even kids who get scholarships to college, it doesn't cover most of their tuition unless you're at a, you know, Division I school, and even then it's a tough life. So,
but I want to tell any kid out there, you know what? I'm not going to tell you to do it. I'm not going to tell you how to make it. I'm going to let Rudy tell you.
Hey, what you doing here? Don't you have practice?
Not anymore. I quit.
Oh. Well, since when are you the quitting kind?
I don't know. I just don't see the point anymore.
So you didn't make the dress?
Come on, Rudy.
There are greater tragedies in the world.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
Yeah.
To prove to everyone that I worked.
Prove what?
That Goonies never say die.
That I was somebody.
Oh, you are so full of crap. Whoa. You're 5 feet nothing. 100 and nothing. And you got hardly a speck of athletic ability. And you hung in with the best college football team in the land for 2 years. And you're also going
to
walk out of here with a degree.
No, I'm not kidding.
No, I can wait. That's a good movie.
And he grew up.
We'll get back to that.
He grew up to be Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, funniest thing I ever saw, holding up at one of the, the games, the Saturday game, college game, that signs in the background, Tom, at game day thing. It was at Notre Dame, and it said Rudy was offsides. All right. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us. All right. Big changes to Wheel of Fortune, but I don't have to tell you that, Tom, because I know you're watching it on that cable outfit that you're just promoting. They have decided they're gonna set up this little part of it. It's going to be like a crossword puzzle, but there are a couple of rules that you need to obey.
I like to solve, Pat.
I'd say everything, don't add anything. Go ahead.
So, okay, say everything, but don't add anything. Meaning just get you, say one, say the word.
Word,
but people have a tendency to.
Flounder, cod, and catfish.
Tom, did the man add anything? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, that's not right. And Danielle, it's your turn.
See, Pat is not allowed to tell you what you did wrong.
Can I solve?
All right, say everything. Don't add anything.
Sole, cod, catfish, flounder?
Yeah, that's it.
I thought that's what you said.
And I know it's always confusing. Oh. And David did that thing that's so easy to do. He added the and.
This has caused a firestorm, John, and the people who watch game shows.
I could hardly sleep last night. I could hear the people just screaming last night. Just torture.
Don't
you
add
smell
anything.
The pitch and the tar. Don't add anything.
Don't add anything. So people are up in arms because that seems like such a minor rule violation. It's a four-word crossword, and he says, and each time, and you never pay attention to it, but if you're a player, you probably would. He just says, just say the words, don't add anything. Well, this guy just was so happy he figured out the puzzle. He just said, and whatever the fourth word was, catfish or something. Mm-hmm. And he got caught. And then the question is that fair or not? Most people, apparently on the internet at least, are outraged by it. And this was proposed.
Outraged.
You know, it's internet outrage. It's not this is ridiculous. Okay. But we did have a listener send us this link, and he made a proposal or suggestion about how we would react to this. And I don't know if he's right or wrong about you, but I know he's wrong about me. And that is, here's his theory, John. His theory is liberals are going to be like, oh, come on, give it to him. It was like, that's a ridiculous rule. And conservatives who are sticklers, he thinks, for the rules would say, nope, you didn't play by the rules. You're out of there. However, yeah. I am as liberal as they come, at least especially compared to you. And yet because I'm a oldest and a rule follower, I say, yes, Pat even tells you these are the rules of the game. It's like you don't win Jeopardy if you don't put it in the form of a question. So I would say, oh, I'm so sympathetic. I'm so sorry, but you didn't get that right. Where would you stand on this?
I guess he's probably doing something like, you know, liberals are more concerned with your feelings than what the rules
are.
Yes.
No, I know. I understand.
I'm sorry. I can't speak to this. I can't. You know why?
Why?
Because Tracy's on Hollywood Squares. I'm too close to it. I was on Hollywood Squares. I don't know if I ever mentioned that before. But, and there's sort of a pact that we have when you're on a game show, as I was on Hollywood Squares. I don't know if you mentioned that or not. We don't badmouth other shows. It's just something we do. We've all agreed to it, and you know,
Cars for Kids, but not game shows.
No, again, as somebody who was on Hollywood Squares, that's kind of the unwritten rule. You know, you just
and
don't do
remind
that.
Me
like when
did
you're
you
overseas,
or,
you don't take a
did
shot.
Did you win
at the
or lose?
Person.
I got you. But did
oh,
you
I was
win
the biggest winner they ever had.
Remind
Tom.
Me.
Biggest winner, $52,000.
Wow!
Oh,
you really knew your squares.
John, I'm going to need the dates of this so I can look it up on YouTube.
Oh, you can
watch
it. You can watch it. I mopped that girl up. Shoo-wah-yo-wah!
With his bald spot. You can see John before he fixed his head.
So can you just go ahead
and... invited me back. Yeah, I'll send you the link.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tracy.
I'm just looking at it.
I was going to say, please text me the link so I can watch that, please. I would really
just
enjoy
did.
That.
Send it to everybody else as well. I look at it during the commercial break every day.